Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis. This edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on field marketing in weeks 18 and 19. Frenis supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
And we're really excited to jump into this one today.
Yeah, we're going to be covering the top field marketing trends seen across LinkedIn.
Which is, you know, a space that is just fundamentally transforming right now.
Oh, absolutely. And, well, you know, there is this funny double standard in the business world. Usually, when a company signs off on this massive six-figure business expense, there's a really meticulous paper trail.
Right, like an ROI model.
Exactly. Like, if you're buying enterprise software, you know exactly what you're getting, how it'll be implemented, and what the return is going to be.
It's highly scrutinized. I mean, every single dollar is tracked and justified to the board.
But then you look at traditional trade shows and field marketing, and suddenly that financial rigor just, it entirely vanishes.
Oh, yeah. Poof. Gone.
Right. It's like, we just accept that we're going to spend a fortune, fly half the team across the country, hand out some, I don't know, branded pens, and just hope for the best.
It has historically been the absolute definition of a corporate black hole. And for a long time, companies could get away with it.
Because money was cheap.
Yeah, money was relatively cheap. And the prevailing logic was simply, well, we have to be there because our competitors are there.
Right. Well, that is exactly what we are tackling today in this deep dive. If you're listening right now and you manage any kind of marketing budget, or, you know, if you're the person who actually has to justify these trips, this is for you.
For sure.
Because our mission today is to unpack this massive shift happening in B2B marketing right now. We are moving away from treating events as pure logistical tasks.
Like booking the 10 by 10 booth space.
Yeah. Or ordering the swag.
Yeah.
And we're finally moving toward treating them as revenue-focused orchestration.
And I think the timing of this shift is critical for everyone tuning in. We're seeing tighter budgets across the board, right? Which means finance teams are asking way harder questions.
Oh, definitely.
And simultaneously, advancements in AI are forcing a total rethink of what it actually means to gather in person.
Absolutely. So let's start at the very foundation, which is strategy and the new standard for ROI. Before anyone can even think about designing a great event experience, teams have to first justify why they're attending in the first place.
Right.
The era of going just because everyone else is going is completely over. Which brings us to some really sharp insights from Alexandra Voronetskaya. She argues that more events simply do not mean better results.
Less is more, basically.
Basically, yeah. If an event doesn't clearly support a very specific goal, like measurable brand visibility, or progressing active deals, or deepening existing customer relationships, you simply shouldn't go.
That selectivity is foundational. I mean, it sounds obvious, but it is incredibly raw in practice. And building on that, Timothy Calder makes an excellent point about what an event strategy actually is. He notes that it isn't just taking a bunch of stakeholder requests, you know, sales wants this, product wants that.
And just stapling them together.
Right, stapling them into a single document. It has to be a firm, defined decision-making framework. It's a filter that tells you what to say no to.
And saying no is the hardest part. Especially when you're dealing with what Moni Olayade warns about, which is executive opinions hijacking marketing decisions.
Oh, yes. This is a trap so many of you listening have probably fallen into. You get a CEO demanding that the booth logo must be, like, the specific obscure shade of red.
Or insisting on having Vegas-style showgirls at a highly technical B2B software booth.
Just to grab attention, right. These subjective whims totally disconnect the event from market reality. They're just vanity plays that ignore what the customer actually needs to make a purchasing decision.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because strategy sounds great in theory, right? A firm decision-making framework.
Yeah.
But how do you actually defend this to a CFO who just sees a massive expense report hitting their desk? It feels like we've been trying to prove the value of a house after we've already bought it.
That is the perfect analogy. And it's exactly the problem Nick Bennett addresses with his concept of revenue coverage in the room.
Okay.
He argues that you do not wait until after the event to measure your ROI. If you're doing that, you're already too late. You calculate it up front before you spend a single dime.
I love this. But how does that actually work in practice? Like, how do you predict the future?
It's a strict mathematical formula. First, you take the expected ICP accounts that are attending.
And for those who might not be deep in the marketing weeds, ICP means your ideal customer profile.
Exactly. The exact type of companies that are a perfect fit for what you sell. So you look in the attendee list and count how many of those specific ICP accounts will be in the room.
Makes sense.
Then you multiply that number by your historical conversion rate. So the percentage of those accounts you typically turn into paying customers. And finally, you multiply that by your average deal size.
Okay, so just to make sure I have this straight, let's say I know 100 of my perfect target accounts are going to be there. I historically close 10% of them, so that's 10 closed deals.
Yep.
And my average deal size is $10,000. So my revenue ceiling for this event is $100,000.
Precisely. That $100,000 is your revenue ceiling. And Bennett says, if that revenue ceiling isn't at least 3 times the total cost of the event, you pass, period.
Wow. You just don't go.
You do not go. If the event costs $50,000 to sponsor and your ceiling is only $100,000, the math just doesn't support the investment. You have to prove the math on paper before you commit.
See, that completely changes the conversation with finance. You go from being defensive about last quarter's spend to being predictive about next quarter's revenue.
Exactly.
But I want to push back a little here, or at least pivot to the reality of the trade show floor. Let's say the math works out perfectly. We have the 3X coverage. We go to the event.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is hitting that revenue ceiling completely falls apart if you fumble the immediate follow-up. And speaking of the aftermath, Jamin Ash shared a brilliant framework about this.
Oh, the crime scene thing.
Yes. He describes the post-show inbox as looking like a crime scene.
That is a very visceral and very accurate image. I mean, if you've ever come back from a 3-day conference, your inbox is an absolute disaster.
Right. Unread emails, vendor pitches, disorganized notes.
It's chaos.
Exactly. And Manash says his teams must score their leads hot, warm, cold before they even leave the trade show floor. Do not wait until you get back to the office on Monday.
Wow, on the floor.
On the floor.
Yeah.
And here's the why behind that urgency. He shared a shocking stat from CIR, the Center for Exhibition Industry Research. The average exhibitor takes 4.5 days to follow up with a lead.
4.5 days. Think about how the modern buyer operates. In B2B sales, 4.5 days is an absolute eternity.
It really is.
By the time you reach out, that prospect has already forgotten who you are, what you talked about, and they're already back to fighting fires in their own day-to-day job.
Right. And why does that happen? It happens because teams are exhausted from travel, they're downloading messy CSV files from badge scanners, and they just don't have a system.
Yep.
But Manash points out that by categorizing those leads immediately on the floor, you ensure that your hot leads get a highly personalized email within 24 hours. You're literally beating the competition to the punch before their plane even lands back home.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it explains why the financial bar for ROI is now so rigorous. Because of that extreme pressure to generate actual revenue, the physical experience of the event has to deliver undeniable premium value.
Right. It has to earn the right to the follow-up.
Exactly. It has to make the attendee actually want to open that follow-up email. And this is especially true right now as our digital channels become increasingly automated and completely saturated with AI-generated content.
Mm. Which brings us perfectly into our second major theme, experience design. Because you really can't just set up a folding table with a branded tablecloth and expect a return anymore, can you?
No, you can't. And there is serious institutional capital backing up this exact shift toward premium physical experiences. Jonathan Kazarian recently shared a massive piece of market data that perfectly illustrates this.
What's the data?
So Apollo Global Management, which is a massive private equity firm managing over $1 trillion in assets, they just made a $1.5 billion all-cash acquisition of B2B event platforms Emerald and Questex.
Wait, I need to pause you there. A $1.5 billion bet on physical event spaces.
Yep.
In the middle of an absolute AI loon where everyone is migrating to the cloud and automating everything, that sounds completely counterintuitive.
It does sound counterintuitive on the surface, but Kazarian points out that they paid a 42% premium to do this. And the core thesis behind this billion-dollar bet is actually fascinating. AI isn't killing events. In fact, it is making trusted in-person gatherings significantly more valuable.
How so?
Because AI is rapidly commoditizing our digital channels. It costs almost nothing now to generate 10,000 highly personalized cold emails or to flood paid search with AI-generated landing pages.
Yeah, that's true.
When digital outreach becomes infinite and cheap, trust becomes scarce. So the real value gets pushed towards spaces that AI simply cannot fake. You cannot algorithmically generate a face-to-face conversation over a cup of coffee.
That makes so much sense. When everything in your inbox might be generated by a machine, a real handshake suddenly carries a massive premium. It's like the ultimate proof of work.
Exactly.
And Ben Wise actually predicted this exact trajectory. He notes that 2026 and 2027 will see the massive rise of the micro event.
The micro event. So smaller, hyper-curated gatherings.
Exactly. Look at your own LinkedIn feed, your inbox. Wise points out that as our feeds fill up with what he bluntly calls AI slop, the internet becomes hyper-efficient, but incredibly lonely.
Wow, AI slop. That's a great term.
Right. People are fundamentally craving physical presence that cannot be prompted by a chatbot.
But here's the critical part. Creating that valuable physical presence requires engineering intimacy. It does not just happen by accident because you put 20 people in a room.
Definitely not.
Alex Adkins highlighted this beautifully when analyzing field dinners. He argues that a corporate dinner is never just a meal. It's a critical brand signal.
Right. And he offered some very specific levers you can pull to design that experience, which I found fascinating. Because we've all been to awkward corporate dinners where you're just trapped at a long table staring at your phone.
We all have. Adkins says you have to design the details intentionally. Take the venue, for example. If you choose a traditional steakhouse, you are intentionally signaling a polished, executive-focused, very traditional brand.
Okay, yeah.
But if you choose an interactive cooking class, you are signaling collaboration, innovation, and a hands-on partnership. The environment dictates the behavior.
You also talked about seating arrangements, which is something I think people totally overlook.
Absolutely. Assigned seating signals high-intent curation. It says, hey, we put thought into who you should meet.
Right.
Open seating, on the other hand, lowers the pressure, but leaves the networking entirely up to chance. And then there's the guest mix itself. Adkins stresses that you should be intentionally combining your current happy customers with your prospects.
Oh, that's smart.
You want to engineer the room so that your customers do the selling for you through natural conversation, cross-pollinating their success stories.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. Because we are talking about intimate dinners of maybe 15 people. But that exact same psychology, that exact same need for engineered intimacy, it applies to massive trade show floors too.
Oh, for sure.
Matt Kleinrock shared some incredible insights on tier one trade show booths. You know, the massive, expensive footprints on the show floor. He points out that a booth shouldn't just be a pretty structure.
Or some subjective aesthetic win that the CEO happens to like.
Exactly. A booth isn't a physical billboard you just stare at. It's a physical funnel.
I love that framing. A physical funnel. Explain how that works in practice.
Well, think about a digital marketing funnel. You have awareness, consideration, and decision stages, right?
Right.
Kleinrock is saying your physical space has to mimic that journey. The outer edge of the booth is top of funnel. It should be inviting, designed to catch attention and start a low-pressure conversation.
Makes sense.
Then, as you move deeper into the booth, the design of the space has to support deeper engagement. The demo station shouldn't just be a rep blindly pitching features. They should be interactive teaching stations.
Okay, yeah.
The whole layout must be an intentional end-to-end customer journey that maps back to those business outcomes we calculated earlier. If the experience isn't designed to drive a specific behavior, it is just expensive decoration.
And that is a profound shift in mindset. But let's be realistic about what it takes to pull this off.
It's a lot of work.
To actually execute these highly curated intimate experiences, whether it's a perfectly mapped field dinner with a strategic guest list or a deeply intentional tier one booth acting as a physical funnel, event marketers need time.
Oh, so much time.
It takes an immense amount of cognitive load to design experiences at that level. And the only way teams are going to get that time back is by letting AI and new event technology handle the logistical heavy lifting.
Which brings us to our final theme, moving from logistics to intelligence.
Exactly.
And embracing that tech requires a complete change in how we view these tools. Daniel Christensen talked about this exact mindset shift. He said he stopped using AI as a tool and started partnering with it as a teammate. He actually does a daily stand-up meeting with his AI.
Wait, a stand-up with an AI, for anyone listening who isn't from a software development background, a stand-up is usually a quick 10-minute daily meeting where a team discusses what they did yesterday, what they're doing today, and any roadblocks.
Right.
How does he do that with an algorithm?
It's brilliant, actually. He logs in every morning and gives the AI his massive, overwhelming to-do list. He prompts it with his core strategic goals for the quarter and asks the AI to prioritize his daily tasks to keep his focus strictly on high-impact work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. By standardizing his workflows through AI, he makes them future-proof and globally scalable. He treats AI as a strategic partner to organize his brain, not just a shortcut for writing a quick email.
That is a great use case. And Sprint Postema elaborates on exactly what this kind of partnership unlocks for the industry as a whole. AI is fundamentally raising the baseline of event production.
How so?
Tasks that used to take human beings days to complete, like writing complex vendor briefings or managing massive RFPs, which are requests for proposals where you have to answer hundreds of technical questions to win a contract, those administrative nightmares now take a matter of hours.
Which frees up the humans to do the human work, the strategy, the relationship building, the creative design.
Exactly. It raises the floor. But Postema points out that the real magic, pushing the ceiling, happens when you apply that same AI intelligence directly to the attendee experience, creating what he calls genuine personalization at scale.
Give me an example of what that looks like.
Imagine an AI analyzing an attendee's stated goals from their registration form, pulling in their company context from the web, and looking at their past behavioral data to determine exactly who they should sit next to at that field dinner we talked about earlier.
Oh, that's amazing.
It removes the guesswork from engineering intimacy. And it goes further. It can generate those post-event follow-ups we discussed based on what that specific person actually experienced and discussed on the floor.
Rather than just blasting out a generic "thanks for stopping by" recap to the entire mailing list.
Right. It's hyper-specific.
That bridges the gap perfectly to what Mananas Metarada is talking about regarding the very near future of the industry, agentic AI. We are moving way past generative AI, just writing a session description for a brochure. Very soon, autonomous AI agents will be working dynamically in the background of these events.
Autonomous meaning they're making decisions without human prompting.
Yes. They'll be actively personalizing the attendee journey in real time, matching people together on the fly based on dynamic interests, and directly driving commercial revenue and sponsor ROI while the event is still happening.
That's wild.
It's like having a digital concierge for every single person in the room.
It sounds incredibly futuristic, but this raises a very important, very grounded question about our current infrastructure. Connor Jeffers brought this grand vision sharply back to our present-day reality.
Uh-oh. The reality check.
Yeah. He made the crucial point that before you can even dream of having autonomous agentic AI running your event and making real-time matches, you have to fix your underlying data.
Oh, because right now the data is a complete mess. If we're being honest, most marketers listening to this know exactly what we're talking about.
It is entirely fragmented. Jeffers notes that most B2B events are still running on incredibly messy combinations of Google Sheets and manual CRM updates.
It's gross.
A CRM, your customer relationship management platform, is only as good as the data entered into it. Right now, teams are flying blind on who actually physically showed up to an event versus who just registered online and stayed home.
And you cannot deploy an advanced autonomous AI agent on top of a broken spreadsheet. It will just confidently make terrible decisions.
Precisely. The foundation has to be solid. Jeffers highlights that by integrating your event operations natively into platforms like HubSpot, and he specifically mentioned a tool called Happily that did this seamlessly for the team at eHouse, you can track registration, actual physical attendance, and follow-up signals cleanly in one centralized place.
Okay, I see.
If you do not have this operational data infrastructure locked down, all of those beautiful top-of-funnel event experiences we discussed will just fall apart behind the scenes.
That is such an important point to end on.
So, synthesizing everything we've explored today, we are witnessing a complete industry-wide evolution in how we gather. The days of just showing up are over.
Absolutely over.
Strict financial strategy and predictive metrics like Nick Bennett's revenue coverage in the room are now dictating attendance before a dollar is spent.
Right.
Because the bar is so high, hyper-curated real-life experiences, those micro-events and physical funnels are being deployed to cut through the digital fatigue of an AI-saturated world.
Yeah.
And underlying it all, AI and native data integrations are taking over the logistical heavy lifting, finally freeing up human beings to focus entirely on deep revenue-generating connections.
If you enjoy this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, go-to-market, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the evolution of field marketing. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an edition.
I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder as you look at your strategy for the rest of the year. As AI gets exponentially better at mimicking human behavior digitally, your physical presence becomes your most unfakeable asset. So look at the next event on your calendar and ask yourself, is this designed just to capture attendance, or is it truly designed to capture attention?